welcome back, everybody. This is That Weird Show, and of course, I am your weird host, The Shadow, and I appreciate everybody stopping by tonight. Tonight is definitely going to be a very interesting show. Before I bring on my guest, I do want to make a couple of quick shout-out, and the first one being, of course, is that this show is streaming live on Parapost Network Central. Thankfully, whatever issue Facebook was having that would not allow me to post has been fixed. So I am very grateful that I am able to stream on Parapost right now. If you don't know what Parapost is, it is a podcast platform where you can find them on Facebook. They've got all kinds of shows, not just about the paranormal, but TV shows and movies and music. So take a swing on by and see what we got. And if you have your own show and you want to stream to another destination, reach out to Parapost and they would be more than happy to help you get your show on Parapost Network. So, also, this show's sponsor is Health Empowers You. If you don't know what Health Empowers You is, it is a website that you can go to, and it's a growing website. They've got more things being added on regularly. But right now, they do have this thing, a PDF of over 200 smoothie recipes. We're talking smoothies to help you lose weight, smoothies to help with your cognitive function, antioxidant, all the good stuff. So healthempoweredyou.net, check out that PDF. And when you're at the checkout, use promo code TWS05 and you will get 5% off that order. And last but not least, That Weird Show does finally have merch. And you can check out the link in the description. Everything that I talk about, including our guest link, are all in the description. Check them out. You can support this show by getting yourself your official Weird Show merch. All right. Now, today's guest, I've been on his show before, and we had a great conversation. And I've watched him with his other shows. I've always enjoyed his work. He is the voice behind the Seance podcast, which you can find on Conscious Radio Network. Again, these links are in the description down below. And yeah, please help me welcome Mr. Paul Meketh. Oh, come on now. Don't do this to me now. Here we go. All right. Slight technical difficulties, but welcome.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Welcome. And yeah, this is, I'm going to try to not to say anything stupid today other than just the weird stuff.
So before we get into tonight's subject, why don't you let the people know a little bit about you and your show?
I'm host and director of Conscious Radio Network, which is a network of different types of series of podcasts. The main one, our regular show, is The Seance, formerly known as The Weekly Seance, which was weekly, but why have that title when everybody knew it was weekly? And then I, October, interestingly enough, it's October. This month is True Ghost Stories. So every year we do a show with guests on the show to talk about their true encounters. The creepier they are, the spookier mm-hmm. are, the better they are. So that's every Thursday night. And you can find us on ConsciousRadioNetwork.com. That's the website, and that's a one-stop shop. You can find us, or you can watch or listen to us on YouTube, Rumble. We also have launched a Patreon page called Project Truth, and that mostly gets into conspiracy and the stuff we're not allowed to talk about.
Well, you know, it. Sometimes I think it's not so much as really being allowed to talk about, but more of a question of should we talk about these if we value our lives in some cases.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, you know, as if you want to have a knock on the door the next day or whatnot.
Yeah.
You have the men in black. What department are you from?
That or you find a dart in your neck in an empty apartment and no idea of where you are.
Yep.
So, now, you've also, you also have a unique involvement with the paranormal. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. I've been involved pretty much most of my life. Ever since I grew up, I had encounters that I just could not explain. As I got older, I'm like, well, I guess this is not really normal.
Right.
And back in after my my first and last divorce, I had a change. Something changed in me. Something was like, you know, was I a failure in my life, or did something's got to shift. Something's got to happen.
Right.
I wanted to be involved and wanted to know more about life, about consciousness studies. And even before that, I started taking a lot of in-person classes in mediumship, and grew that gift, tuning that instrument, so to speak. And then after the divorce, I was like, dude, I there's something else that I need to do. Spirit is calling me. God is calling me to do something.
Right.
And I went back to school. I didn't know you could get a degree in metaphysical science. And got my bachelor's, master's, and then went through my doctorate in metaphysical science, and went through the paranormal classes, paranormal science, the forensics of it. And got my ordination through the church as well, and became a pastor of a spiritualist church here in Orlando, Florida, where most of our parishioners are mediums, either student mediums or certified mediums. And we would go on cases. I would just, you know, act as the case manager, and bring on some cases and work on, you know, whatever cases out there. And have had quite a few. I've had even a couple, lack of a better word, exorcisms. Not the full-blown exorcisms that we
were
from the movies, but pretty close, pretty close. And doing a lot of study work on basically most of these cases. My job was to investigate the client, and not the event or what they're claiming.
Right.
And that is similar to what I am about to do actually pretty soon. I became a clergy member, an affiliate clergy member of the Order of St. Michael Seminary, which is the Order of Exorcists through the Catholic Church.
Okay.
And basically we're demonic profilers. We get a case, and it's global. This is all over the world. The cases come in through the archbishop, and they get published to whoever is closest in that area, and then they do the outreach. It's an outreach program, and we investigate and bring in the client, and kind of either in person or over the phone. Doesn't have to be in person at first, but we kind of just investigate the client, find out how, you know, what is actually really happening.
Right.
And as the case moves forward, then it can get determined whether it's a true demonic possession or not. Most of it's not. Demonic possession is very, very rare. Very rare. Most of the time it's oppression or infestation.
Right.
So, right now it's just doing my show and associated work with the order, and that's pretty much it. Having fun.
Now, kind of back to your thing about possession and things of that nature, and this to kind of tie into another aspect of Halloween later on tonight, but one of the things that I've learned through both personal experiences as well as my research, you know, aside from the fact that true demonic possession being extremely rare, because one of the things about it that mostly we don't quite understand is in a demonic possession, you literally become a passenger in your own body.
Yeah.
And then that's the hard thing for a lot of people to wrap their heads around, not being in control of their faculties. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of times, and I remember reading a couple of cases about this, and I even came across one myself, and that is a lot of the, whether you're looking at haunting or any kind of demonic activity, a lot of time I find the psychology or the psychiatric disposition of the person involved or multiple people involved played a very big role in, you know, how bad some of these cases can get, you know, especially with younger women who have gone through some sort of traumatizing experiences, like certain types of assault. Mm-hmm. In your experience, have you ever come across a case to where the, well, let me get this, what are the difference between possession and infestation? We'll answer that question in just a second. That's actually a good question.
Yeah, yeah.
So, in your experience, have you ever come across a case where all the manifestation that you were seeing wasn't really supernatural at all, in the sense of other external spirit, but something that would be attributed to something that you would call like an egregore, a manifestation that's caused by the person and not an actual spirit?
Yeah, that's a lot of the cases that psychokinesis, mm-hmm. usually the trigger of the event or the scenario or the encounter for that individual it's usually triggered by some sort of a tragic event. But there could be also some other factors that play into it as well. And which is why also when we ask too, it's like, okay, are you on any medication? Are you, do you drink? You know, do you drink alcohol? Do you do any type of drugs? What kind of job do you have? What's your profession? There are so many variables into what could trigger these things within a person's lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very important. But when it comes to somebody experiencing something like that, whether they think it was, you know, whether they thought that they were attacked by something,
right.
And they could quite possibly be. I've been attacked, and I've had some cases too where they were with other people, but nobody else saw this.
Yeah,
they were the only experiencers of this event, when they had no witnesses, even though they were around a lot of people.
Right.
So, what was it? Was it their psyche that was doing this? Was it the devil? Was it an entity that was creating this infestation, so to speak, causing this person to think things, perceive things that weren't really there?
Right.
And that's normally how some of these evil, malevolent spirits start to make their way into your life, is to just slowly break you down, slowly but surely. Mm-hmm. No, that I'd answer the question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the personal experience I had, there's a place called Sturgis Park here in Minnesota, and there was this urban legend, so to speak, of there was a bathroom. It had since been taken leveled and had a new bathroom put on top, but there was an old bathroom or outbuilding that had eyes on the sink and "Help Me" written in blood on the mirror, and people were saying that somebody was murdered here, and a lot of people have paranormal experiences there. But I come to find out, and this took, you know, a long time to research, but I found a report of written by a guy who said he started that as a prank by using eye from the fish that he caught, and then using the fish's blood to write on the mirror. So now you have a haunted location with documented experiences, but nothing to warrant it. Yeah. You know, and that's why I mentioned the whole point of egregore, the people manifesting these sort of things themselves, especially in large numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, because you have this whole town, they almost everybody has a story about this haunting. So to the question that was asked earlier, the difference between infestation and possession.
Well, we obviously know what possession is. Possession in and of itself is when a spirit completely takes over your faculties, your mind, your body, your own spirit, that we just, you know, it just breaks down the body. Infestation is this really slow kind of trickle, this crawl towards, you know, some of your perceptions are off. You start to get these. It could be, you know, hauntings. You know, you start to perceive things. You know, moving in the house, which I feel could be related to the psychokinetic, and psychokinesis.
Right.
And the infestation too can also. I feel that some of these symptoms of infestation are habits that you pick up that are not normal.
Mm-hmm.
Speech patterns, you know, can possibly change, and it can be stuff that either the individual who is experiencing these infestations is only aware of, but nobody else is, or the levels of it can vary based on,
right,
you know, how deep the person is, and how the psychosis is too. Some of the cases in the past, you've had, not to throw out a specific demographics, but the largest demographics right now are teenage girls.
Okay.
And even the Archbishop was telling, I think this was brought up too with the Archbishop, that teenage girls are very prone to infestation and or oppression because of hormones. It definitely doesn't help. But the hormone changes, peer pressure, they're at that part of their life where it's like they want to fit in, and the psyche of this particular group, is a large group. So, and that's that's like, you just put the number together of the entire human race of all the teenage girls between the ages of 13 to 19. That's a lot. That's a very lot. But those who would be experiencing this is very small, but that's a lot of the cases. And infestation is, those things can actually affect the infestation.
Right.
It's kind of, and like the word infest, when we say infest, or infested, what's the first thing that comes to mind? The first visual that comes to mind when we say infestation, we probably go
swarm of bug.
Or a swarm of
rodent.
Rodents, ants on the counter. Stuff like that. It's usually something that can appear physical at first, that really just it's a trigger for you,
right,
of seeing things or hearing things or whatnot. It's just before you breach that that precipice of going into the oppression, mm-hmm. where it's your mind is starting to kind of cave in before you even get to the possession part of it.
Right. So, yeah, one thing that I've learned in some of my reading is that no possession has ever happened when somebody has full control of their faculty, or when somebody is aware of, you know, behavioral changes or anything like that. Possession happens to people who have just been, you know, like you said, broken down to the point to where there is just no cognitive defense in the mind for it. And a lot of times, I've also feel like another demographic that tends to be overlooked, and I know I'm probably going to catch a lot of flack for this, but within that teenage group, you have a lot of teenagers who are looking for answers, or they're looking for purpose. So they start to gravitate toward things that, you know, aren't exactly positive to their mental health. And no disrespect to people who are into Wicca or, you know, any other theology or belief system, but you got to admit, a lot of times when you see people that are just gravitating toward whatever darkness or dark side of their belief system, that puts them in a very dangerous position to, you know, start to see these sort of manifestations and other supernatural or spiritual problems that may arise. And, you know, it's scary to think that how many young people out there are just playing with fire with no real clear guidance or warning as to what the consequences may be. Because you and I, we were teenagers, you know, somebody tried to tell us something and we're always like, yeah, you know what, I got it. We've all been there. With that being said, how important do you think it is that we as, you know, veteran investigators or people who have really taken the time to study the field to try to educate the next generation or just the younger generation, if they're not looking to be paranormal investigators, if they're just looking for a trend or something that's fashionable at the time, how important do you think it is for us to educate these people and at least try to warn them about the dangers?
Oh, it's very important. I feel it's very important, especially this day and age. The amount of cases that are coming in of people that are calling out the possible possession or oppression, they're having issues, you know, what they're saying are demonic issues and negative mm-hmm. energies and stuff. The numbers are going up. They're not going down. And what we got to realize too is like attracts like. If our children are getting into, you know, this type of energy, and as children, if it, you know, like, let's just say, you know, I was interested into it. I've never worked with it, not until I got older, because I needed to understand it. And the peer pressure of these teenagers is, I don't know. It just seems much worse than it was back when I was growing up. I mean, you'd see it on the news every day. But it's very important that we should educate our children into understanding. One, I feel that you have to have some sort of faith. You got to have some sort of faith, whether you're Catholic, Jewish, Sikh, you know, Buddhist. You got to have some sort of faith to understand that something of light, something that can work with the highest and best. And when the last show I recorded, we were talking about love, that we're all love. We have to work with love. Love is the all energy. It's the energy of God. It's the energy of creation. But there is the yin and yang of it too. You know, you can't have bad without good. You can't have dark without light. You can't, you know, these opposing forces of nature. And you know, when we come into this world, when we're born into this world, we're born into love. We're born into the creation of light, you know, with our with the spirits around us, with our ancestors. We're born into light, and maintaining that is I feel it's a responsibility for our parents, the community, to keep the keep these teenagers from dabbling into stuff that can be a potential of harming them spiritually. Yeah. And I feel that is also a trigger to, you know, some of these cases of infestation, oppression, or possession.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's. Right. I don't know. Have you felt that some of these, you know, people are coming more forward with these stories that wouldn't have otherwise have come out with the stories or their, you know, their experiences of either the darkness or just paranormal in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I. When I had Night Watch, the one thing I can say is that 80% of what I investigated can easily be explained as naturally occurring phenomenon. You know, something natural occurring, impacting, you know, what you're seeing or hearing. 10% is unexplained, which means that I've not been able to find enough data to confidently say either way if it's paranormal or not. And then the other 10% is paranormal. And the vast majority of that 10% that is paranormal, I have found to be demonic. And, you know, when I look at Facebook and when I watch YouTube and I listen, you know, I see these things that pop up in my feed about people that are just such bizarre things are coming up. And they're getting into these dark areas that, you know, they're the reason why a lot of religion teach against getting involved with those sort of things. And I'm not exactly sure. I'm not entirely sure as to why people are gravitating toward the darkness. I mean, the only thing I can say is that, you know, the devil is not going to tempt you with something that you're afraid of. If he's going to try to get into your life or into your head, he's going to try to find the one thing that you desire most and then start to distort that. Mm-hmm. And a good example of that is pornography. You know, and I myself have, you know, struggled with that. And I learned that when it comes to, you know, especially with teenagers, as you say, the hormones are starting to fire off, you know, now they're starting to experience things that they've never really experienced before, and they don't quite understand how to cope with that. You know, that's the sort of thing that a lot of times you'll find that starting point. You know, it could be others, it could be for money, some it could be power or control. But yeah, every problem with a demonic element starts off with something that seems innocent or just a natural desire.
Yeah.
And then it just goes bad.
And I think too, you know, a lot of the teenagers too, it's, you know, when they get into this darkness stuff, it feels like too that it's a way for them to be able to fit in. Because there's always that one person, that one other kid that eggs everybody on to be part of whatever it is that he or she is part of.
Yeah.
You know, and then you bring in somebody else into the coven, so to speak. And then it starts going bad, you know. But, you know, as teenagers at that age, we're not really hungry for power in general, not like politicians.
Right.
We just want, you know, or just we're at that age. We just want to fit in. You know, we want friends. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to associate and have fun and tell our stories and learn. And, but then when those hormones kick in, it's like, that could be dangerous. I mean, it doesn't help. So, crazy.
I think people find that, thrilling and, horror entertainment. Yep.
Yeah. I feel the entertainment industry is also does not help in this. It definitely does not help. I completely stay away from watching horror movies because that does lower it lowers your vibration.
Yeah.
It decreases it. It brings it down.
Well, I mean, not to bash on the Conjuring franchise, because I mean, I have respect for Ed and Lorraine Warren. Mm-hmm. But I mean, have you seen how Hollywood has taken some of the case of Ed and Lorraine and just, you know, I know Lorraine Warren was there on a couple of them for consultation, just to provide more authenticity to what was going on. Mm-hmm. But the whole cinematography and special effect and that whole, you know, those moments that just make you catch your breath and you're like, oh,
yeah,
you know, that completely distorts the reality of what happens when it comes to possession. I myself, I've never possessed, but I had an attachment and I didn't know. And the changes in my behavior were so gradual that even my closest friend didn't really see it coming either.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it took me months to shake that off after I went to church to get prayer. And it's a very unsettling feeling. And now, because of that, anytime I get around, you know, a location that's demonic or has known demonic activity, I become very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So
I'd have to admit to this. This happened, I'd say, probably a couple months ago. I'm about to tell you something. I'm about to tell the audience something that I don't normally talk about this, but sometimes you got to let it out. But a couple months ago, I was working on some material for, you know, for some of the shows and stuff, for the podcast. And I was doing some light work. Some energy work, raising my vibration, meditation, and stuff like that. And I was sitting in the living room on the couch, and this darkness came into the room. I felt it. I felt the entity. I couldn't see it, but I could feel it. Mm-hmm. And then I smelt it. You can smell it.
Yeah.
It smelled death. That's what it smelled like. And right away, I knew what it was. And I literally said, "You're not welcome here. Get out."
Right.
And it left. Whatever it was, but it was like, it was kind of like a traveler coming through and just, you know, trying to find an attachment. I'm like, no, you found the wrong place. You found the wrong host.
An attachment, like I said, an attachment is not, you know, on the same level of possession, but it is, even an attachment can be scary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've had my fair share of getting them off of people, along with our parishioners and the people that, you know, that I worked with in the past. We'd have to do it in a group. You just can't do it alone. Power in numbers. That's how you work it. So,
I do apologize for the AC coming on. It is unusually warm in here. Well, I shouldn't say unusually. You know, it's been an unusually warm fall for this part of Minnesota.
Climate change, my friend.
Yeah.
Of course climate changes. Duh.
Yeah, I heard a pastor say one time, change, the one thing that never changes.
Yep.
So now that we've kind of, you know, set the tone for Halloween conversation, what are some of the strange things that you, you know, may have read about or experienced around Halloween?
Interestingly, is I don't have too many, only for the fact, probably because I'm so used to embracing the holiday, the ancient holiday of Samhain, and realizing for what it is. Yeah, it's the harvest. It's basically the end of the year.
Yeah,
Bringing in a new season of harvest. But it seems that the people that I've worked with, I've worked with law enforcement, I've worked with spiritual leaders. I used to have cases all the time. That's when the level of cases would go up. I'd get phone calls, emails, text messages. Hey, I saw your website, and you know, and I'm just want to know if you'd be able to look into this. And it spikes during Halloween. Okay. I don't think that's a coincidence. Right. I just feel that Halloween is a gateway. It's a portal.
Mm.
A collective portal. The more people that put energy into it, the more that stuff happens.
Right.
It becomes a tulpa, so to speak. You know, you got to put energy into it, but it's a collective. And yeah, over the years here in, you know, Western society, we've definitely turned it into something that it wasn't originally. You know, candy, really? No.
Yeah.
Trick or treat and stuff. I mean, fun, great. It just, but I feel that Halloween should be a holiday to where we should reflect on our shortcomings, and get more in connection with our ancestors. I mean, the whole masking up, no pun intended. And you know, wearing all these costumes to ward off the evil spirits. Believe me, it's not going to take a costume to ward off evil spirits.
Right.
But I feel that it should be a connection to spirit, to our ancestors, to our bloodline, and embrace that.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's embraced in many other different countries. I mean, Mexico, Day of the Dead. And some African countries too. I mean, they don't have necessarily have that holiday, but it's a way for us to do that.
Yeah, even China and Japan have specific days that's dedicated to just honoring the dead. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that you say that because one of the early traditions of Samhain was the family would prepare a place at the table for a family member who had passed on, because they believed that, you know, between October 31st and November 1st, the veil was thinner, which would allow their ancestors to be able to come and commune with them, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you would mention, you know, honoring the ancestors and self-reflection and things like that. I can't remember where I read this, but I couldn't help but laugh when I read this, but somebody wrote that Halloween is more Irish than St. Patrick's Day. You know, because Samhain, if I'm not mistaken, originates with the ancient Celts.
Yeah, the ancient Celts, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's more Irish than St. Patrick's Day. I mean, either way.
Yeah, Northern.
Some of us are getting drunk.
Yeah, Northern Europe. Scandinavian, Mediterranean, but yeah, it's more, I feel more the connection with the Northern European, Ireland, Scotland. But if you notice through, interestingly enough, China's starting to embrace the Western version of Halloween now.
Yeah.
Than they used to. When I was living in Shanghai back in 2015, 2016, they called it the Halloween market. And it was like a huge festival downtown. It was actually close to where I was living off of the Pudong district. And you'd walk down there and it was this giant like village that they'd build. And yeah, it's just a lot of the Halloween-ish esque type stuff that we have here. Not as much as the candy though.
Speaking of candy, do you remember the candy scare of the 80s? When they were saying, the whole thing with parents having to check the candy of kids for drugs and needles and razor blades.
Yeah, that people were putting, razor blades in candy. I remember that scare. Yeah. I remember that. Oh, man.
And interestingly enough, I only found like a handful of cases of that even happening. And of course, I think what it was is there was this one particular case that really set the sphere off. Was a father had poisoned his own son pixie stick so that he could collect the insurance money from his dad.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was an actual case. I mean, you can find that, the police report, the news report, all that. It's a really sad story. And it's sad that that happened because, as a Christian, I have one view of Halloween. And then as, a person who is not perfect, regardless, I've always viewed that when it comes to kids, whether it's Halloween, Christmas, Easter, whatever, any of that, no matter what, never mess with the kid. Mm-mm. And that's just, I don't understand people who do that.
They're sick. Really sick.
Yeah. And so I know that kind of got a little dark there, but I mean, that just, these are some of the realities of things that have happened on Halloween. I'll kick it over to more positive. Did you know that Halloween was basically also something similar to a Valentine's Day? Or Samhain?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people believe that with the veil being thin, that they could see a psychic or a seer, as they would be referred to back then, and find out about true love on Halloween night. I did not know that. I just found that out just a couple of days ago when I was doing some research for tonight's show.
Huh. That is cool. That is cool. I think, too, is like with Halloween and Halloween in general, I kind of look, it's like I feel that we should look at the big picture of Halloween and kind of look at the representation of it. Is we've been kind of steered by the entertainment industry,
yes,
and media, of the evil or the darkness or the gore of or horrors of it. But when I look at it as a whole, we are always drawn by the taboo aspects of life.
There's a morbid curiosity.
Yeah. Anything out there that's taboo, we're always like, it gets our curiosity. We're like, whoa, what? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
The death has always been taboo. We never really want to talk about death, especially our own.
Yeah.
And I feel that's what keeps Halloween especially kind of interesting and engaging, is having us, and when I mentioned about the self-reflection is we steer that energy of reflecting on the eternity of consciousness, the eternity of ourselves, our spirit, spirit of our ancestors, spirit of anything out there. That Halloween has been, especially here in the West, as a Halloween to endure the curiosities of the human spirit, and the eternal, or the physical side of our being.
Well, I also feel like there, when it comes to self-reflection, I think, and I can say this about myself, at least, I think a lot of time when we have those moments of self-reflection, we're afraid to have that brutally honest, no bullshit look. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is the potential or the fear of, you know, like for Christian, there are Christians out there that fear that they, you know, they may be wrong about everything. And then there are atheists out there who secretly fear that the Christians are right, you know, or Islam is right, or, you know, whoever, you know. And what do you think, real quick, hey, Jonathan Meyer from Crossover Paranormal Society, thanks for stopping by. I appreciate you checking this out. What do you think, how do you feel about people who at least make the mental effort to set aside the fear and be completely honest about themselves, about what they feel, about what they believe, and about what they understand? What are your thoughts if would happen if people would be able to put aside those fears and just have that pure, unadulterated self-examination?
That is definitely a crossroads of understanding oneself. It's not allowing the ego to get to step aside. You know, it's allowing telling your ego, just step aside. Right.
Hold on. Yeah.
I truly want to be genuine to myself, because if I can't be genuine and honest with myself, I can't be honest with anybody else.
Right.
And examining our own fears, like, oh my God, I'm scared to go in this room, or I'm scared to go grocery shopping because I'm afraid of public spaces and too many people.
Yeah.
And you know, or anything like that. It's sometimes you just gotta, you know, when I. Now, here's a little bit of a flip on it, too, is where is that fear coming from?
Yeah.
Sometimes we absolutely have to ask that question. It's like, where is this fear? Where is this fear coming from? And then you ask yourself, what you want to do is you want to connect to your higher self. Connect the higher self, meditate on it, kind of breathe, and ask where. Where is this? Where do you feel the fear? Because sometimes when there's a fear, you'll feel something within the body, within the physical body, whether it's your chest, or even your chakras, of your main seven chakras. It's, you know, you'll either feel a pain in the pelvis, you know, solar plexus, belly button, stomach, heart area, chest, shoulders, neck, throat, you know, whatever, head, whatever. Where is that coming from? Where is that pain? It's usually associated with something that is connected to a potential past trauma, or a potential connection to something that had happened in the past. For those who might believe in this, in reincarnation, you know, of past lives. Right. There's these traumas that we do carry with us throughout lifetimes, whether we've resolved them or not. Or if we haven't resolved them, you know, obviously they're going to stick with us. But we have to. I feel it's a really, you have some real integrity, an honest person, a high integral person that faces their fears is hats off. Wow. You're making a really good stride, and that's determination, and that's discipline too. I mean, having the discipline to be able to do that is awesome. And it's very important. I wish more people would do that.
Yeah. I will be the first to admit I do not always have that discipline. Mostly because, you know, I have those moments like, you know, and this isn't so much in regard to self-reflection or anything, but when it comes to dealing with things that, you know, realistically, it's just everyday adulting. And I know that I need to take care of my responsibilities and that I should probably work on certain aspects of my life. By the end of the day, it's like, well, you know what? I took out the garbage. I'll call it a day. I'm good. Mm-hmm. You know, I made my improvement kind of thing. And I get that way sometimes. Yeah. And I have been making improvements on that. I mean, I've actually started changing the way I eat. I've started exercising every day, you know. I've managed to go from being 298 pound with a blood pressure of 160 something over 110,
wow,
or 120 down to 260 some pound with a blood pressure of about 120 something over 80 something.
That's a very good improvement.
And that's just it. I mean, when I first started, I was so determined, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And I set these unrealistic goals, and I always just end up stopped. So then I just, you know, I'm just going to do one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. Started by walking every day. Then I started doing walking every day and changing the way I eat. And then I started to not just change the way I eat, but how much I eat. Because I'm 6'2", or almost 6'2". And in my family, when we eat, put it to you this way, the Hoppin family tradition is women and children first, because the men will clear the table on the first run.
Yeah.
You know, I come from that blood stock. So, you know, these kind of small changes, these kind of things can be applied to how we think. And this is something that I'm just now starting to realize and try to implement. Stop thinking critically. Stop thinking negatively. Stop, you know, looking for the worst in people and try to see the best in people, even if they are being complete shithead.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm tired of being bitter, which, and I know people are thinking, why is Aaron talking about this shit? Hang on. I'm tired of being bitter. I'm tired of having that negative mindset, because that's the kind of thing that will start to manifest what we talked about earlier, mm-hmm, with oppression, infestation, attachment, and even possession in the most extreme cases.
Yep. Because our thought, process, our emotions, how we think, mm-hmm, will trigger those things. And that's one of the main laws of thermodynamics is a sort of a law of attraction, because like attracts, mm-hmm, like. If you have that energy, that those thought patterns, that type of mentality, it will dictate your emotions, and then your reaction will then just bring in more negative energy, and it just keeps, mm-hmm, manifesting and manifesting and manifesting.
Yeah. Well, we are just about at the 1 hour mark. What is the weirdest Halloween story or horror story about Halloween you've ever heard?
Hmm. Man, there are so freaking many of them. I don't. Man.
Huh. Yeah, I know it's hard to pick one when you've lived such a strange life.
Yeah, it's
Because some of the strangest actually comes off as normal to people like you and I sometimes.
Right. Yeah. Somebody say, that's weird. I'm like,
yeah, really?
Yeah. It's like there's a place here in Florida called Casadega. And years ago, a few years ago when I went there, and you know, I'd always get there, and I wasn't allowed to say the word weird in town. No, I'm always, oh, what do you say? What did you say? Did you say weird? You're not supposed to say weird. That's not weird.
Yeah.
That's normal. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I can't even think of one. I really can't.
Well, I have one that you might be very interested in. Last year, I think it was. I'm pretty sure it was last year. Mm-hmm. But I was helping Anna Brandemart host her show, Paraphobia Radio. And she had managed to get a guest, Bill Slevin, who was on The Devil's Academy. Mm-hmm. And once I started talking to him, I went back and I actually watched the program. And then I actually started doing the research on it. Have you ever heard of the Miami Aerospace Academy?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. What's that?
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Okay. This would be the location, and this happened right before Halloween. This was the only documented of mass possession. So, a little backstory on it, and I'm only going to give bullet point because if you really want to find out more, if you or anybody who's watching or listening, you're going to want to do the research because this is a really scary and very real danger. There was a guy who defected into the U.S. who was a part of the Cuban military that failed on the Bay of Pig. Yeah. And so he set up an academy to teach aerospace and aerodynamic. The problem was is that none of the teachers were qualified teachers. They were never trained as teachers. They never went to school for teaching. They were just people he found off the street who shared similar ideas as him. Secondly, the kids were not exactly being taught things about aerospace. They were being taught things about tarot card, Ouija board, Santeria, really dark stuff.
Yeah.
And they had a hall monitor who would walk up and down the hall, and if he caught any student, he would paddle them with a cricket board that had holes drilled into it.
Whoa.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is like, you've heard the expression, the perfect storm.
Yeah.
This was it. Because I believe it was October 25th. It started with one girl who just was not feeling good, and she ran into the bathroom, and her friend followed her. And all of a sudden, they found her on the floor convulsing, and all she was saying was, the devil's inside me, the devil's inside me. And they say that she levitated. Hmm. And then all of a sudden, two boys who never had a problem broke out into a fight. One of them being thrown out of a second-story window, and when he landed, he got right back up, snarled at the student looking out the window, and ran off. Huh. Then there were other students that started to behave, and other students that just started lashing out and speaking weird language. Now, normally I would just, you know, hear about this. I'm like, yeah, okay, right, whatever. Mass possession. But this is where it really hit home. There are actual police reports and medical records of the students who were brought in from the injuries they had sustained that day.
Yeah.
So this isn't just an urban legend. This is something that really happened. So yeah, Miami Aerospace Academy, or I believe it's on the Travel Channel. You can check out The Devil's Academy with Bill Slevin. And there's a couple of people on that show who were students at the academy at that time, because this was 1979.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it's weirdest story I've ever heard that happened on or around Halloween, and it's a scary one. That one just makes me, I mean, even now, it just kind of make my stomach a little.
Yeah. So one does come to mind. I'm sure you probably know this, but maybe a lot of the listeners may not know this. I found it intriguing when I first heard about it, and I was like, you gotta be kidding me. No way. What? So, I mean, we all know Harry Houdini. We all heard of him. You know, but most people don't realize that he died on Halloween, the night of Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah. A guy who has defied death, you know, his whole life, doing all this stuff to defy death. And, you know, he gets to the point where, you know, he suffers a punch from a college student and dies just hours later at the hospital on the night of Halloween.
Yeah, and a lot of people say that it's usually because what Harry used to do is he would say, punch me in the stomach, and he would be able to, you know, position himself or flex in a way that would, you know, minimize the damage. Mm-hmm. This person just came up and hit him, and he was not ready for it.
Yeah, yeah, it was a sucker punch.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, I talked about this on an earlier show, but I still think it's worth bringing up because it is such, it is so ingrained in American history, especially with radio. 1938, Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Orson Welles, War of the Worlds.
War of the World. I think I have a copy of the original broadcast somewhere. I remember getting a copy of it, and I was like, what's really cool is for anybody who's able to get an original, I would say original copy, but a copy of the original taping of it,
mm-hmm.
the authentic taping of it, where you get all the, you know, the static and the actual radio news.
Yes.
And just sit back, turn down the lights, light a few candles, mm-hmm. and meditate on it while you're listening to it. And take yourself back into the 30s. They didn't have TVs. You had radios, man. You just got to put yourself in that time period. People thought, really, really thought that the world was being invaded by aliens.
Yes. Well, you know, to be fair, this is also coming right around the beginning of World War II. So people are already at a very, you know, anxious and heightened sensitivity and fear.
Yep.
So I can't really blame them for panicking. If anything, hats off to Orson Welles and the people who put that show together.
Oh, man.
Because you have to be unbelievably well-prepared and convincing with the sound effect, the timing. I mean, there was no take one, take two, take three. This was start to finish, boom, all the way through.
Yeah.
Live radio.
Your Foley artists in the background on all mic'd up and ready. And
it's like, absolutely.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, man. And I don't care what people say about podcast. You know, no disrespect to Joe Rogan, but Joe Rogan will never be able to pull off a stunt like Orson Welles with War of the World.
I don't think anybody would be able to get away with it.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah,
that too.
Yeah, you will have the men in black on your front door before you.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And that bright flash might not be a deneuralizer. It might be a flashbang. It depends on which men in black showed up first.
Yeah. Yep.
So. Well, anything you want to. You know, any other upcoming event or programs you got working with?
We got four more seasons of True Ghost Stories. This Thursday, all the way up every Thursday up to the night of Halloween. True Ghost Stories. The night of Halloween is going to be the scariest. Definitely listen to it. It actually comes from a friend of mine who's a local former lieutenant from the Lake County Sheriff's Office. Stuff that has happened while she was on duty. And I thought, and the Archbishop is actually going to be on, not this week, but next week, I believe. Yeah. Not this coming week, but the week after the Archbishop will be on. I thought his show was going to be really creepy and scary, but it wasn't that. We are more talking about oppression, you mm-hmm. know, and some of the cases and stuff like that without giving out too many details, obviously.
Right.
But it wasn't. It ended up being from law enforcement. So.
Oh, okay.
For those who are in the state of Florida or down south here in the southeast and are familiar with the town of Casadega, which is a spiritualist camp, which originally started in Lilydale, New York. It's going on between 125 and 130 years ago is when the camp was originally established.
Oh, it's been around for a while.
Oh yeah, it's been here for quite some time. It's a historical town, very old. Some of the original homes, and it's quite active. So I will be there during the weekend of October 18th, 19th, and 20th. We've got some paranormal investigation teams throughout the state that will be showing up, if not the country, but a lot of them are from the state of Florida. So I'll be there to support that effort, as well as having my podcast. I'm not going to be doing a podcast, but I will be there to, meet and greet.
Right.
So I'll probably be assisting some of the paranormal investigation teams and going on some of them. Might be hosting a tour. I'm not sure. I was asked if I would consider, being a tour guide.
Sounds like fun.
So for those who are not familiar with Casadega, it is a spiritualist camp for mediumship. For those who are the National Association, it used to be part of the National Association of Spiritualist Churches connected to Lilydale, and then they spawned off quite some time ago, long ago. So now it's an independent spiritualist camp. The seances, working with spirit, obviously, different types of seances from table tipping to just general deliverance of messages to people individually, transconfiguration type classes or sessions. They have a church every Sunday like normal church does. During these, and if you're interested in, mediumship and want to get into mediumship and learn how to do it, they'd also offer classes on it as well. So,
is this an in-person class, or do they also offer online courses?
I think it's in-person.
Okay.
I think it's mainly in-person because you got to, for at least 6 or so months, you have to kind of be there in person to do this. There are options too there's some of the classes that I took were actually online. The Morris Pratt Institute is a class that you can take of mediumship, learn the decorum, learn the do's and don'ts, learn, how to, meditation and stuff like that. And learn how to expand the mind, so to speak, because that's what it is. It's learn to get in contact with our higher selves. Other than that, that's what's coming up. October is the busiest month for me, crazy enough.
It is for a lot of people.
That's all it. Right. Yeah, that's what's happening.
All right. Well, like I said, everybody, if you go down into the description down below, you will find a link for ConsciousRadioNetwork.com. So click on that and check out Stay On Podcast, as well as everything else that information that you can find on this website. Follow Paul Muckus here and show some support. It's been great having you. I definitely would like to get you back on again to talk more about weird stuff. I got a lot of weird ideas for this show. And if anybody, for those who like really know me, I'm the guy who will find a rabbit hole and find the raggedy ass go-kart, cut the brake lines, and just let gravity do its work and see where that rabbit hole takes me. sometimes I wish I hadn't, you know, I'll end up wishing, man, I probably should have left the brake lines alone on this one, but because there are some rabbit holes where it's like taking a trip without ever leaving your house.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do hope that you'll come back on to do some more stuff like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Let me know what's happening, you know, what's happening. If there's a specific topic you want to talk about and stuff like that, you want to, you know,
absolutely,
you know, get the knights around the table.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, I do have one show that I would like to do. I mean, it's not going to be a Halloween show, but it's definitely going to be an unusual episode. And I tried to do it one before, but I want to get different people from different principles to come together and just have a powwow, basically. Yeah. And, you know, just share ideas and beliefs. And the concern I have is, you mentioned a word a while ago, ego. You know, because I mean, I am just as guilty as anybody else. You know, sometimes I get an idea in my head, you know, and I'm convinced I'm right. Like, nope, it's my way. And that's not the right way to be. So I'm hoping to be able to do this without judgment, without ego, and just do what we all say we're trying to do. And that bring the paranormal field to a place of legitimate study. Legitimate credibility.
Yeah. It's like, we got to learn to just step aside, let people say what they got to say and just listen. That's it. That's all we got to do is just listen.
Yep. All right. Well, hang out in the back room and I'll talk to you right after this. And, you know, we'll see where we go from here.
Yeah,
cool. Thanks again for stopping by. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome, Aaron. I appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much.
All right.
Humbled.
All right. See you in just a second.
All right.
All right. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. That is Paul Meckes, host of Stay On Podcast and producer for Conscious Radio Network. So check him out. And again, if you're watching by way of Parapost, you know, let me know if you like the content, share, follow, subscribe, comment. And real quick, before I do go, as I posted on my page, I am going to be giving away these mummy keychains start in 2 weeks. I have four of them. And if you want one, you need to be at the show. You need to be in the audience. And I will be adding your name to a hat. And I will be pulling out names. So again, in 2 weeks, I will be doing my mummy key ring giveaway. And with that being said, as I say at the end of all my shows, be smart, be safe, and be kind to one another, because you never know, your one act of kindness might change somebody's life. And when you can't see the light, be the light. And just as importantly, stay weird.